I'll go to the Board of Supervisors meeting. If you please rise to the flag slip. Good morning. First thing on the agenda today is a presentation. Birgit Fluttiger and Adam Christensen.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Crosby. Adam Christensen, your sheriff here in Stanislaus County, and it is truly my pleasure to come before you today to recognize the men and women in law enforcement who made a significant contribution to our community back in 2003 when this community, both here in Stanislaus County and other counties as well, suffered the wrath of individuals who forced their way into people's homes, robbed them at gunpoint, and committed crimes that most of us would shudder to think about happening to us. This was a traumatic experience for those people. Recently, I had the opportunity to sit with the district attorney, Birgit Fluttiger, in the courthouse to listen to the victim impact statements just before sentencing of the three individuals, the primary suspects in this case, who fortunately will no longer see the light of day. We have a lot to be thankful for in our community, primarily because of the men and women who protect and serve us each and every day. They are truly the heroes, those who put their lives on the line, work long hours, sacrifice their families at home to protect all of us. And it is my pleasure this morning to recognize the lead detective as well as other members of law enforcement that came together on this case. If we were to truly recognize everyone that contributed to this investigation, we would fill the board chambers. We had other allied law enforcement agencies and multiple other people in the community who assisted us in this effort. And we expended considerable resources and personnel in order to get the job done, but we did. And even today, we get the job done, and it's important to recognize those who do the work every day. So with that, I'm pleased and proud to introduce to you members of the Sheriff's Department, and Birgit Fluttiger, the district attorney, will introduce her staff as well, and we'll recognize those people for their contributions in this case and the successful prosecution. Thank you very much.
Good morning. It's my real pleasure to be here this morning for this ceremony recognizing these outstanding individuals over here. This community was terrorized over a period of several months back in 2003 by a group of individuals who targeted families sleeping in their homes, and they brutalized them. Justice may not be swift, but it is certain. And it has finally been achieved for our neighbors and friends, and for that we are very grateful. We rarely take the time or make the effort to thank people, as we should, and to recognize those whose efforts go above and beyond what is expected, especially in the area of public safety where so much is expected all the time. Where we as a matter of routine have such high expectations for our prosecutors and staff and for law enforcement, we have high expectations and yet most of the community is truly unaware of the personal sacrifices that are made by those who devote their careers to protecting the public. The incredibly long hours, the late nights, sleepless nights, and the weekends away from family, all done in order to put in the amount of work, the number of hours, that are required to do the job as it needs to be done. Sheriff Christensen has spoken of the role that his detectives played in solving this horrific series of crimes. They deserve great credit. I have the privilege of publicly acknowledging some of the truly dedicated and talented members of the District Attorney's Office who played such an important role, not only in bringing the perpetrators to justice, those who have just last week been sentenced to such lengthy terms that they will never get out, but equally importantly, they worked closely with victims and their families, and they demonstrated the empathy, compassion, and professionalism that we expect from all our staff on behalf of all victims of crime. Alex Loy and Galena James are victim advocates who assisted the victims and stayed with them through the very long judicial process. Jan Gauthier is an investigative aide, and Richard Valentine is a criminal investigator. They worked long and hard to assist our prosecutors to find and serve witnesses, to follow up with investigations, and to prepare the evidence for trial. Sharon Lizardo and Nate Baker, two talented and experienced career prosecutors who do a difficult job each and every day, and who do not shy away from the really tough cases, even though they require so much more in the way of personal sacrifice. Because they truly care about public safety, they care about professionalism and ethics, they care about being a prosecutor, and most importantly, they care about the individuals who've been preyed upon by the criminals who walk among us. I'd like to share with you a letter that I received from a juror in this case, and her eloquence in praise of my staff makes me very proud and should make each of you proud. I would like to take this time to let you know how I feel about Nate Baker and Sharon Lizardo, how they performed their job during the home invasion trial that lasted over 3 months. As a juror in this case, there was a lot of time spent listening, watching, and observing. In the beginning, I wondered how they were going to be able to tie all of the people to these crimes and convince me as a juror that they were guilty. They stepped up to the plate, did their homework with the help of the people working with them, and were ready to take on the accused. I feel they did an excellent job and showed true compassion for all the victims. I think they took that extra step to show they truly cared about them and would try their hardest so that justice would be done. They really wanted to help bring some closure to these families. As a juror, I am proud to say that they made my job easier to find these thugs guilty and get them off the streets so that no one else will have to endure what these families went through. Mr. Baker and Ms. Lizardo have definitely set the standards very high, and having people like this should make you proud to be their boss. I feel honored just to have been a small part in this. Janie Ostrander, juror number 10. She has said very well what I have difficulty conveying with adequate emphasis. I want to thank all of you for taking the time this morning as part of this meeting with the board to recognize such truly dedicated public servants of Stanislaus County. Thank you.
I thought I would introduce my folks as they approach. I think that they're going to end up here. Approaching first in order, Sergeant Mario Cisneros contributes a significant amount to the department. Currently is assigned to the Family Crimes Unit as a detective sergeant. Next in order, in uniform, Sergeant Mike McIntyre, who currently is in charge of our civil division across the street. Mark Nuno, a detective with the homicide unit, is also a significant contributor to this investigation, as is Detective Mark Copeland, Detective Priscilla Woods, and Detective Ed Campbell. And finally, Assistant Sheriff Bill Hine, my closest confidant, and shares a lot of the same values that I do, was also a large part of this investigation. So again, it's my privilege and my honor to present these fine men and women to you in service to their community. Thank you.
It's truly an honor to do this today, to thank all the men and women of our public safety sector. Under the great leadership of Sheriff Evan Christensen and District Attorney Birgit Flatiger, I want to thank you for the jobs you do each and every day, especially in this case, but in every case that you guys take on, and through your hard work and your efforts, bring justice to those who deserve it in this county. So thank you very much for the job you do. We have a certificate to formally thank you and acknowledge the hard work you do every day. So thank you very much. Next item on the agenda this morning is public comment period. This is a time of the agenda where the public can speak on any item that is not on the agenda. We do limit it to 5 minutes. I do have one specific request, and we'll start with Linda Ray.
Good morning, Chairman of the Board, and everybody. I'm just a normal, common, everyday citizen. I have taken the role. I have a pamphlet here that I will give to her to make copies of you, that we became legal guardians of our dual diagnosed 24/7 grandson, and we care for him in our home, and here is all the information from Valley Regional Center. These are places that we take him to the doctors, to the eye doctor. He goes to JFK. There's a letter from in here regarding his teacher. And I would like for the board to see and check up on me and see the care that my grandson gets in our home. On the evening of 1:30 of this year, at 11:45, I had an officer, Caraway, jump my 6-foot cyclone fence, bend it, pound on my door, pound on it, got us all up. My husband opened the door, and I turned the light on, and he aggressively pushed his way into my home, demanding to see my grandson. He says, "I have to see your grandson." Well, all this pounding and all that he had done, my grandson got up from this room. Now, my grandson is an epileptic, and you'll see on here, on 127 of 06, I had to administer CPR because I found him dead on the floor in his bedroom. He's a 24/7 needs child. We need all the rest that we can get. My household were all disabled, and we've taken on, and there is report in here, a case summary from D. Maddox, Officer Maddox, that was to my home. And before he came, CPS came to my home to check my home. Well, what I'm saying is this was a very traumatic situation, and I had already talked to Officer Sergeant Watch Commander Finn on 10-23-06 at 5:40 p.m. I've been keeping a book, a log. And he promised me, he said, the next officer that came out to my home, that he was to write up a false police report on the neighbor who called. He came out on my light shining in her living room, which it shines. We live in Cowan Track. There's no sheriff patrol. We have a right to protect our property. I pay for two lights from TID to shine in the street. Not in my home, but shine in the street for my protection out there. And anyway, that has not taken place. That has not taken place. I talked to Officer Caraway last night on the phone. He called me. He didn't know what he was calling me for, but he was left a message that he was supposed to call me. And, you know, I told him we're not doing well from this incident, you know. And I asked him, like I talked to Watch Commander Kylie, I wanted to know if he was going to write it up as a false police report. And he told me no, because it wasn't. I said, because my neighbor called you, my light shining, in her living room, which it's not. She was already told by Officer Watson that it's legal. That you, from there, take that call, jump my fence, bend it, traumatized my home. Just he aggressively pushed his way out and demanded my husband to go outside. My husband said no, he wasn't going to do that. He was going to sit right there in that chair, you know. And he's lucky my grandson didn't have a seizure on him, because, you know, when you startle him, he, at least he had his lights over his eyes, and I went and cuddled him. But anyway, I'm here for the board. To see, I can't get anywhere. They won't talk to me about this. But I was told by Commander Sergeant Finn that they weren't going to allow this neighbor to use the Sheriff's Department to harass me anymore. They were going to take steps to make it stop. And I've had Officer Humble. We've been out in the field working. He's come to my home hollering. He was told that we had a lawsuit with this lady and that we were out hanging up on her. We were out in the field working. I know I only have 5 minutes. I don't know. I'm not a speaker. I am just a citizen. I am a caregiver of my dual diagnosed 24/7 grandson. In here, which is from the Valley Mountain Regional Center, UC Davis. Now, I'll tell you why I'm so mad. Because Isaac has ammonia protein. He's been on phenobarb. He's on seizure medication since he's been 12 years old. And I didn't give him his last dose because I didn't get any sleep, and I have been tired, and I've been upset ever since this 30th. And when the situation comes in your life, when you're unable to care for this grandson, the next step is a home. And it's not his fault he's that way. The cord wrapped around his neck at birth, and he was denied oxygen. You know, he doesn't have a life to begin with. And I'm asking that the board step in and see that this case number and this situation be taken care of like Watch Commander Sergeant Finn said it would be.
Linda, thank you, and we'll make sure that information gets to the top of the Sheriff's Department.
And I also know, and I appreciate, and I told that Officer Caraway when he left, I told him, let me open the gate. I don't want you to get hurt. We know, and I respect the Sheriff's Department. I respect these individuals. They put their life on the line every day to protect us, and I believe in them. But I have to do some way. Something has to be stopped. So I can get what I was promised from Sergeant Watch Commander Finn.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to make comments under public comment? Seeing no one, we'll move on to consent calendar. Anybody wish to pull any item or...
Commander O'Brien, I'd like to pull item B4 and look for some clarification there.
Item B4. I'd like to pull item B6. And is there anything else? Is there any public comment on consent calendar? I have a motion minus B4 and minus B6.
Also moved.
Second. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Item B4, approval of revisions to regulations for use of Stanislaus County Library special purpose rooms.
Let me pose my question, and maybe it can be easily answered. I notice here that there's setting up a fee schedule for a couple of rooms, specifically in the library system, and a $30 reserve for all of the library rooms with the exception of Patterson. The concern that I have is the Salida Library. It's frequently used for the MAC meetings and other county-related functions as it relates to the community, and I don't see anything in here that allows for that to continue without the $30 fee.
Actually, this agenda item waives fees for governmental agencies, including the MAC. The part about the Patterson meeting rooms is we have an MOU with the City of Patterson, and they book the rooms. So that's why that one is excluded. But there would not be any cost for a MAC or any other governmental group to use a library meeting room. We're just talking about private entities using the rooms, and there would be fees for them that way.
Okay. I was hoping that was the case. I wasn't able to find the verbiage that supported it, so I wanted to make sure that before we voted on it that we had it in place.
It's in here. But, of course, with trifocals, it makes it fun to find. let's see. It says, this is section E in it, and it says, it's underlined, the last sentence, exceptions to reservation policies may be allowed by the county librarian for library-related functions or regular meetings of government legislative bodies, which includes MACs.
Okay, I'd like to see it stronger, that excludes them, rather than allowing the librarian to create an exception.
Okay. So you just want it specific
for MAC? I just want to specify that, rather than allowing, it might not be you and I here someday, and we don't want
to,
a subsequent librarian to say, no, you know, I decided that I don't really want to do that.
Okay.
With that, I'm fine.
Can we just add that in?
Can add in, and what I suggest is amend section E to put a period after library functions, and then state means of government legislative government bodies or government-related legislative bodies are exempted.
Okay.
With that correction or addition, I'll move approval.
So the motion and second with the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Item B6, approval to adopt the recommendation of Stanislaus County Fire Authority to enter into contract with Salida Fire. I pulled this just, there were two proposals in for this, and one was for less money than what was approved, what the recommendation is for approval. And I personally just want to abstain from the vote. So, can I have a motion?
I move for approval.
Wait a minute, what did you do?
I don't feel, there's only one contract or one proposal that was included in the staff agenda.
Okay.
The competing applicant is for less money.
Perhaps I can provide a little clarification relative to this particular item. It is staff's recommendation that Salida be granted this contract for fire training services. The evaluation of the two proposals was done by the fire authority, which is comprised of representatives of all of our fire districts throughout Stanislaus County. It was the opinion of two-thirds of, I believe it requires two-thirds of the persons in attendance approval to enter into or recommend an agreement that would use less than countywide funds. Following an evaluation of each of the two proposals, it was the recommendation by more than a two-thirds majority that Salida be granted this contract because it was believed that the value added from the agreement with Salida would more than offset the cost increase.
See, I'm not a fireman. I'm not a fire chief, and we have the professionals on this fire authority board. However, I also look at tax dollars, and so that's why I'm abstaining. I understand their position. They are the experts. I also look at the money, and I'm just abstaining from this vote.
I'll restate my motion to approve.
Okay, I'll second.
Motion to second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain myself. Passes 4-0. Okay. Now we're moving on to item scheduled matter, 925, public hearing to consider Williamson Act cancellation.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien. I'm Ron Freitas, Director of Planning and Community Development. With me is Angela Freitas. Angela will present this item to you and the Planning Commission's recommendation.
Good evening, Chairman O'Brien, members of the Board, Angela Freitas, County Planning. The request before you this evening is one, to cancel Williamson Act contract, and secondly, to approve a use permit request to operate an RV camp. The project site is located at the northwest corner of Crow's Landing Road and Carpenter Road in the Patterson-Newman area. Both the project site and the surrounding area are designated by the County General Plan as agriculture and zoned A2 general agriculture. The project site and surrounding area are predominantly agricultural uses. There is a legal non-conforming mobile home park that sits on the other side of Crow's Landing Road, the San Joaquin River. The site itself consists of 13 acres, just kind of an aerial closer up view of the project site. The project site itself consists of about 13 acres of unirrigated grassland that's bordered by the Reclamation District levee along the east and the San Joaquin River along the south and west. The entire site is located within a flood zone. The majority of it's within a 100-year flood zone, with a portion of it being within a 500-year flood zone. Access to the site will be off of Carpenter Road, off of a separate parcel, or at least assessment parcel that is owned by the Trail Rock Sportsman's Club. Also, the 13-acre parcel in question is this one here. About a 3.57-acre campsite has been identified. The site itself currently consists of unimproved campground, trap shooting and pistol range, a clubhouse, bathroom, shower facilities, and a single-family dwelling. This site and the use on the site became the subject of a code enforcement case back in April of 2005 due to exceeding the legal nonconforming uses on the site itself. The legal nonconforming status of the site authorizes camping, fishing, shooting activities, and unimproved campgrounds provided that they comply with the definition of recreational use provided under the Williamson Act. The use permit that's being requested at this time is necessary to bring the existing uses and improvements into compliance with current zoning requirements. It would allow for both electrical and sewer hookups to be used for a maximum of 12 individual RVs and allow up to 5 annual events of various durations to take place during the year on the site. The Williamson Act cancellation is needed because the requested use exceeds the current definition of recreational use provided under the Williamson Act. In order to cancel a Williamson Act contract, there are one of two findings that must be made by this board. One is this cancellation is consistent with the purposes of the Williamson Act, or two, this cancellation is in the public interest. The applicant has provided findings to show that the cancellation is consistent with the purposes of the Williamson Act chapter. These findings have been reviewed by both staff and the Department of Conservation. Department of Conservation concurs with the applicant's findings. Just in brief, to go over what those findings are for cancellation consistent with the purposes Those are notes of non-renewal has been served. In this case, one has. The removal of adjacent land from agricultural use is unlikely. In this case, given its location, its bordered location, we don't believe that it will impact any adjacent agricultural land. But the alternative use is consistent with the general plan. The use itself is recognized in the agricultural designation by the A2 zoning district, and I'll go over that briefly here in a couple of minutes. The discontinuous patterns of urban development will not result. We don't believe there's any evidence to support that in this case. And if there's no proximate non-contracted land which is available or suitable for use proposed on the contracted land, and we believe that to be the case. As far as the cancellation value and the fee, when you cancel a Williamson Act contract, you must pay a 12.5% fee based on the market value of the property. In this case, the assessor has identified the cancellation value of the property to be $60,000. The cancellation fee, if approved by this board, would be $7,500. And again, the use permit itself is for the RV recreational camp. That use is defined as a Tier 3 use under the A2 zoning district, which are uses which are not directly related to ag, may be necessary to serve the A2 district or may be difficult to locate in an urban area. In order to approve a Tier 3 use, there are two findings which have to be made. One is that the parcel on which use is requested is not located in one of the county's most productive agricultural areas, as the term is defined by the county as the agricultural element. Or two, that the character use that is requested such that the land may reasonably return to agricultural use in the future. In this case, the site has a limited soil capability, it lacks irrigation. There's been existing development and non-permitted agricultural uses on the site dating back as far as the 1930s. And we believe that with those factors, it makes it difficult to define this property as the most productive as being in the most productive agricultural area. This item went before the Planning Commission on December 21st of last year. The Planning Commission did raise some concerns with respect to past code violations on the site and with the cost of implementing the use permit based on the conditions of approval. The applicant's representative did explain at the hearing that the individuals that are currently in control of the club were not aware of the code violations. Now that they are aiming to get the property into compliance. And the club president, Mr. Scott Fisher, spoke with respect to the cost. He stated that they were not sure of the overall cost, but they felt very confident that the club would be able to cover the cost to implement the use permit. The Planning Commission voted 8-0 to recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve both Williamson Act contract and the request for the use permit. If there are any questions, staff is available to address them at this time.
Questions?
Well, I just, the sewer hookups are going to come at a later time, according to the report. They're not asking for that at this time.
Correct. At this time, you specifically want the electrical hookups. There's already been some electrical hookups installed. That was part of the code violation. The sewer hookups are being asked for future dates.
Absolutely. When you talked about this, the requested use permit would authorize an unlimited number of unimproved campsites. You're going to improve 13 campsites, okay, with water and sewer, I understand. Mm-hmm. But there'll be an unlimited number that can camp there. That's what this says right here.
Correct. Currently, there is no limit on the number of unimproved campsites that the facility can have. What they haven't been recognized as having are the large annual events in more recent years, they've been holding out there and having the improved sites where they can hook the RVs up.
Okay, now this leads me to the second question. I think it was last year that when the river came up and all these camps along these areas along the river, that there was a crisis and they all had to be moved out. They moved from place to place to place. Isn't that true? I mean, what you're doing here is you're allowing something in a flood zone that's going to have to be moved out when it floods. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's flooded probably in the last 10 years, probably twice, mm-hmm. maybe three times, I'm not sure. But where do you draw the line if you're going to allow things in the flood zone? Mm-hmm. We don't allow anything, any permanent structures in the flood zone. Mm-hmm. But now we're going to allow these other things that they'll have to be moved down. That'll become a crisis.
There are specific conditions of approval that have been put in here to make sure that the 12 units that can hook up to electric and sewer are not made permanent, that they can't stay there for any duration longer than 14 days. Is the recreational camp would be there on a temporary basis?
Okay, and the Fish and Game, they didn't comment on this at all?
No, they did not.
They didn't want to comment?
Well, the Fish and Game did not comment.
Do they want to wait to comment, or do they ever comment?
Well, the Department of Fish and Game did not specifically issue us a comment. However, because of the new state legislation changes with respect to finding the project to be de minimis, the Department of Fish and Game did review this project. So they have reviewed this project, but they have not provided any formal comments specific to the project other than finding that they do not find the project to be de minimis for purposes of the California Environmental Quality Act.
Okay, now, Angela, you said that in the past it's had code violations?
It has been.
Okay, it's had numerous, more than one code violation. What makes you think it's going to get any better?
Well, at this point, getting this cancellation and this use permit is part of the actions they need to take to correct their code violations.
I mean, if they can do what they want, I mean, once you cancel it,
no, they will still be bound to the limitations of the use permit that they have requested. So it's not a free call.
What I'm trying to get at is that they've had these violations in the past. What makes us think they're going to get any better? It says right here. Okay. The existing electrical hookups and trailers were installed in the early 1990s without the proper building permits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but in fact, I know that in this county that if you do something without the proper building permits, at some point it's brought back to you, and all these things have to be taken care of before you do it again.
This use permit is an effort to bring them into compliance. The applicant's representative is here, and I'm sure he could speak more to the subject. The club has been in transition with as far as who the leadership is. It is our understanding now that the current club leadership is very much aware of the code violations, whereas in the past there was some misunderstanding as to the exact status of the site, and they have been working with the county. They have been making efforts. They've not been continuing the activities out there, to the best of my knowledge, since they were found to be in violation. They've filed the proper applications. They were required as part of the code enforcement action, and they are here before you today to try to resolve the issues to get their site into compliance.
Okay, well then. Well, I guess we have to hear from him to take care of all these things, right? Okay.
Supervisor Montes.
If I read this correctly, it says on the camp, this primarily is going to be used during the weekends?
Correct.
And they've had some 2 to 3 campsites active during the weekends, and they believe that 5 to 10 activities, perhaps 20, would be the maximum. So most of this use will be on the weekend.
Correct.
I also believe, as you stated earlier, that there may have been violations in the past. This is their attempt to bring it forward. This club has been in operation since the 30s. I'm very aware with it. I have shot trap out there myself, and I believe that they're addressing, trying to bring it into line and this is their attempt to do it, and I believe that they will be accountable for those services.
Supervisor DeMartini?
In the staff report, I noticed item 26, the condition for on-site water system has been added. Is that something that's going to be done in the future or be required now? On page 27 and item 26.
That states that prior to the operation of the facility or the expiration of the permit, that they have to obtain a permit from Environmental Resources. So I would take that to mean that if they were going to operate, they have to get their water well taken care of.
They have to get it tested or...
Yeah, there was a change to item 26 at the Planning Commission based on a letter that the applicant's representative had submitted in. Condition number 26 was changed.
30 or expiration of the permit, whichever occurs first. The owner must obtain a permit from the Department of Environmental Resources for the on-site water system. It will be subject to that from the very beginning. It was a matter, the condition was changed based on some terminology between state regulation and local regulation on the permitting system, or the water system.
Okay. The only other question I have, the Army Corps of Engineers said they should have a wetland delineation. Is that something that they're going to do, or?
That was originally a request from the Army Corps of Engineers. The project was put on hold. The applicant's representative had subsequent conversations with the Army Corps of Engineers, and that requirement was dropped.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have one more. When you're talking about they're going to put their well in, they're going to put their sewer system in. Now, if it floods, what does that do to the sewer system? And what does that do to the well?
You know, I don't have the expertise to speak on how the sewer systems are designed in the flood zone. Both the water system, the sewer system, and any other facilities that are built do have to be built to standards for flood zones.
Okay, any other questions? At this time, I'll open the public hearing. If you wish to speak on this item, please come forward at this time.
Good morning, members. David Hogg, 11855 Walnut Avenue, Oakdale, California. Supervisor Mayfield, I just wanted to address your concerns with respect to the violations and your concerns that you brought forth.
Well, you can talk to all of us, but you don't have to point me out.
Okay, all right. Initially, the violations that they were cited for, there was a non-permitted mobile home, there were non-permitted electrical hookups, and the camping. Those were the three violations. Immediately after the first abatement hearing, the mobile home was removed. The electrical lines were taken. This whole process that we're going through is to address your concerns, to get this club in compliance. Upon approval of this, there really won't be any issues that could come into any coding violations.
So you're saying that if this area floods, that it has flooded?
Correct.
Quite often. Okay, if it floods, then your sewer system is going to be able to, it's not going to contaminate anything, your sewer system. Okay, and your water well is not going to be contaminated if it's covered over.
First of all, with the sewer, that this issue, the issue of the sewer was included early on. And so at this point, that's why it's maybe or maybe not. It's up to the club if it's going to be feasible, if they're going to include the sewer. That being said, any sewer that's going to go in is going to be in standard with flood zones. I mean, it's required by the conditions of approval.
I haven't really seen, I don't want to argue about it. I haven't seen anything you put in a flood zone that doesn't cause a problem at some point. I mean, and we haven't been doing this for a long time, not just about anything in the flood zone to be built.
Right. The only thing I can say to that is that when we do build a flood zone, there has to be some type of mechanism that protects during the flood. And also, with your concern over the camping and the crisis that could come up with the flood, it's not as though the club intends or the club ever has just maintained a camp out there. If you could went out there to date, there hasn't been any camping since the initial abatement board came up, since the initial issue came up. There's been no camping out there. And it's that's kind of the whole reason for this process, is to be able to allow the club to use their facility for their intended purpose. It's not as though you can drive out there on a Tuesday and you'll see a camp town. It's not.
So you're saying that what you're saying is that the 12 approved campsites won't be occupied most of the time?
They can't.
It can't be. Just a weekend?
Do you know, within the conditions of approval, Angela can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's 2 weeks max is what each RV site can allow for. You can't park out there for longer than 2 weeks at a time. And as far as the camping goes, and the dry camps, as they call them, it's already generally permitted under their existing usage. It just has never been a case where there's been a camp sitting out there, there's been any reason for a crisis or a need to be evacuated. I see your point. It's a valid point, but this is not the type of project or premises that has ever been like that. So I don't see any indication that it's going to be in the future.
Any other comments or questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to speak on this agenda item? Seeing no one, we'll close. Oh, yes, sir.
I understand, my name is Charles Parker. I'm the vice president of the Turlock Sportsman's Club. I've been there about 10 years. And the question about would there be camping during the week, there's retired people like such as myself that at times will go out there and camp, not just for camping's sake, but to work. I mow lawns out there. We don't have a caretaker there now. And we've like taken turns, different members, and they won't be able to come out and camp and bring some equipment that's needed. We have some lawnmowers, like riding lawnmowers tomorrow, but we do, some camping during the week. Our functions, when we do have them, they're all scheduled for Saturdays. And like people would want to come in that can on a Friday, and they would camp Friday and Saturday, and then most of them, if not all, would leave out on a Sunday. In respect to the numbers of campers out there, I counted one time when we had quite a few, and we had like, 10 or 12 either motorhomes or trailers, and then we had about the same amount of tents that was out there, and this was on a function, and this probably exceeded the most I had seen out there by 5 or 6, 7 maybe. I expect it to grow somewhat. I'm a membership chairman, and I take the new members, and I get a feel for what they're interested in. And most all of them are interested in shooting, but they like fishing, and they want to come out for a weekend to camp, bring their family, they can shoot, and they can take their kids to go fishing. And I just want to clarify that. Now, there was a mention of water sampling. 2003, I pulled water samples because we had some doubts about the water. And the nitrates were a little bit on the high side. It was considered potable water. After the flood, I took another sample, and the bacteria and the nitrates were low. The bacteria was zero, which I wouldn't expect it after flood. And the nitrates were less than 5%. So actually we had a better water sample just a couple of months ago than we had in the past. I could explain that. But I just wanted to clarify a couple of issues, as far as like the camping and stuff.
When you're sitting on the board, you have to ask all these questions, because when we talk about flooding, everybody, well, they're getting flooded, we got to get them out. And like I say, it's happened in the past. So.
Yeah, and the floods in 96-97, when Bryant Dam opened up fast, mm-hmm. and that was a fast flood that did quite a bit of damage. And you still, if you was in there camping, you would still have plenty of time to get out. This last flood, we had a phone call, and we hurried out there. We didn't have anything, to be particularly concerned about, but some of our, computers, and we take our tables and chairs and get them up as high as we can, and we have, a bar that sells some beer and soft drinks and water, and we put them up on tables, and we do things like that. We haul some stuff off to storage. And then after the flood, then we bring them back, and we're trying to store a few things up higher. But it's not a panic situation, as far as when it floods and gets out. And even the water was about as high, from what I've heard, even a little bit higher than it's ever been this last year. And the clubhouse floor held up quite well. No damage to it. It was deep. Okay, anyway, I just wanted to clarify a couple of concerns. I know that you and Jim are having this tonight.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak? And I'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the board. Supervisor DeMartini.
This particular club is in my district, and I have been out with code enforcement on two occasions, and I know I have talked to the attorney that's representing this club at least one time, maybe twice. The problem with the club is that it was put under the Williamson Act years ago when it shouldn't have been. And this is not an agricultural operation. It's not irrigated land. And the Williamson Act restricts you to only agricultural operations. And I'm very well aware of the Williamson Act because all of the land that I have is in it. When code violations were found by the code enforcement, they were unable to correct anything because they were in the Williamson Act, and electrical hookups and other structures that they wanted, they were not able to build or repair. So the only way out of this for them is to get out of the Williamson Act. And in my view, after looking over the staff report, that I believe they do meet the findings, which are not easy to make, to be able to get out of the Williamson Act, which is something they should have never been in. And that's going to cost them to get out of it. But that's unless they can do this, they're not going to be able to have this club any longer. So I intend to vote for this today. I believe that the important thing is that the findings, I believe, have been met. And that should get them on the road to making these improvements and operating their club.
Is that a motion, Mr. DeMartini?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you. Okay, moving to item B7, approval to introduce, waive the reading, and adopt its frequency measure and ordinance amending San Jose County Code Chapter 9.9 related to San Jose County Community Health Center Board.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, and Mr. Krosnick. I'm Mary Ann Lee with the Health Services Agency, and with me this morning is Cindy Coit and Dean Wright. And I'm here to give you an update on the FQHC look-alike application. I want to start by giving a little background, and then I'll get into the particulars and what we're recommending this morning. The Federally Qualified Health Center look-alike, or FQHC look-alike, is really a means to bring more revenue into our clinic system. We are providing care to about 80,000 residents of our community, and this is the most significant initiative that we have going in order to try to preserve access to this care. And we're estimating that if we're successful with this designation, that it could bring in about $3 million, maybe a little bit more, $3 million annually to help the clinic system. Unfortunately, as you know, we've been running annual operating deficits for a number of years, and for the last couple of years, we've been working closely with the Chief Executive Office to develop a plan to go forward in the future. And As you know, you approved a strategic plan in September of 05. That plan included a long-term commitment to dealing with the past accumulated deficit, as well as kicked off multiple cost-saving and revenue-enhancing initiatives. What I have in front of you there, some of which is you've already seen before, so I won't go point by point, but I did want to give you an update on where we are with the electronic medical record. That was an efficiency improvement that was contained in a strategic plan, and it's really about moving off of paper medical charts onto an electronic system. There has been a good deal of time put in by staff and some of our faculty positions looking at potential solutions. We're not ready yet, but we have we've narrowed down to a couple of vendors. We still have more questions, and it won't be too long before I think we'll have a recommendation on an EMR system. Regarding the facility redesign, we have made significant progress. I can officially say that we're now operating out of 6 sites instead of 7, which you approved. We're not quite done. We've got one clinic that's really operating out of 2 physical locations, the residency program, and that's not efficient. But we're hoping that the Paradise Medical Office remodel will go forward and be complete by summer when we can bring that that residency program clinic back together in Paradise. And then finally, I've listed that you've approved that we seek this FQHC lookalike designation. I didn't mention CPE. I probably should just make mention of it, that that's still moving forward. But it's really now between the state, the Department of Health Services, and a division of the federal government. And from my perspective, we have less control in terms of timing and likelihood, but it's still an initiative going forward. It's not worth near the amount of what the FQHC award could be, though. So what I really want to focus on now is the FQHC lookalike application. We spent a good part of 2006 preparing ourselves to submit that application. We created and we've been facilitating the Community Health Center Board. That was a prerequisite to being able to file an application for this designation. The application was submitted in late August, and on January 23rd we received a response that was requesting additional information and some required changes in order for further consideration of our application. So what the reviewers are looking for, they've asked some questions and want some additional information that supports need and community impact, information about services availability, and that's largely about after-hours access, and then finally issues that involve governance, and that's really what we need your help with this morning because it involves policy changes. Items 1 and 2 are really staff issues. We're capturing some additional data and preparing additional information to provide. But what I'm going to go through are some suggested policy changes with regard to governance, and it involves the appointment removal of board members on that community board and authority with regard to priorities and strategy. We're working on a fast track here. The information is due back to the federal government by February 28th if we want that application to consider being reviewed for the award. But aside from the deadline imposed by the federal government, we really have a sense of urgency here locally. I want to call your attention to the 3-year strategic plan and the timeline and point out that we're really just past the midway point on the 3-year plan. And while we've been tracking along so far, you'll notice that the general fund contribution in the plan for fiscal year 2007-2008 is an aggressive change over where we've been. And we really need this FQHC designation in order to get there and to avoid reductions, perhaps, to access to services, to our healthcare services. So this final review and designation can't come soon enough for us. What we need to do. What I have in front of you is, you've actually seen before as well, this is the ordinance that you adopted back in May that established the Community Health Center Board. These are the key components to that Community Health Center Board. And I've bolded there, appointed by Board of Supervisors, because that's the issue that the reviewers have made, has to do with who has the authority to appoint that community board. Okay, this is what we are recommending. Everything stays the same except for, again, what I have bolded. It is, according to the federal rules, the Board of Supervisors can appoint 2 members to the Community Health Center Board, while the remaining 9 members need to be appointed by the Community Health Center Board members. While what we had constructed is in place in another county, they received their award many years ago, and according to the current federal guidelines, this is what they are, what they're expecting. We have called out that those 2 Board of Supervisor appointments would come, one from the Chief Executive Office and one from the Health Services Agency. Currently, and as you appointed, those seats are filled by Patty Hill Thomas and by Dr. John Walker, Public Health Officer. Okay, so that really dealt with the appointment and replacement issue of the board. The other issue has to do with the division of authority between the Community Health Center Board and the Board of Supervisors. And what I have before you is what's in place right now. And under the guidelines, it's certainly acceptable for a county government under this model to retain authority over personnel policies, rate setting, and the budget and fiscal policy. Where the reviewers have trouble with our model has to do with the Board of Supervisors retaining the authority to approve the Community Health Center Board's financial priorities and strategy. As we understand it, the FQHC lookalike model and what the reviewers are looking for, the Community Health Center Board is made up of a majority of users of our clinic system, and under the guidelines, they're really looking for that Community Health Center Board to be closer to what the community need is, since they, many of them are in fact users of the system, and they want that board then to be able to help drive what services we're providing, and those priorities and strategies are really viewed to be something that then needs to be under the authority of the Community Health Center Board. So I'm doing kind of a before and after. Now what's before you is the very same thing, but I've removed that the Board of Supervisors would have the authority to approve the priorities and strategy of the Community Health Center Board. And then finally, what we're asking for this morning, we're asking that you adopt as an urgency measure an ordinance that amends provisions of the existing ordinance, Chapter 9.90, and approve an amended agreement with the Community Health Center Board, both of which involve the matters that I've just outlined. In order to go forward with a submission back to the federal government, we'll also need to have changes made to the bylaws, and we'll be presenting that to the Community Health Center Board at their regular monthly meeting tomorrow. And with that, I will close and ask if you have any questions.
Supervisor Crawford.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. If we could go back a couple of screens, I think it was a little bit confusing for us. That screen shows that the board continues to be responsible for personnel policies and procedures, rate setting, budget, fiscal policies and procedures. Now go back one more, if you will, please. And then here it says approval of CHCB's financial priorities and strategy. There's a bit of confusion there. So this board, of which we appoint 2, will come up with a strategy and financial priorities. But the Board of Supervisors going forward will actually be the ones to allocate the money and staff to help them fulfill the strategy. So there's going to need to be clear cooperation there or nothing goes forward.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And I can understand this from the standpoint of the federal government doesn't want to pony up more money and then find out that some county somewhere is taking that money and using it for whatever they want and not applying it most directly to where the community needs it.
Yes, and I think you just hit directly on the point that what the federal government wants is for this community board to establish financial priorities. However, the funding issue still remains that of the Board of Supervisors. But they want to look to the Community Health Center Board to establish what they believe the appropriate levels of services and types of services are. And then the organization then has to work through that. And then ultimately, however, the decision regarding the ultimate financial decisions remain with the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
And the federal government actually understands that, although they understand that the county governments and other legal entities cannot delegate their budget authority. So, but they have to have that portion with regard to financial priorities and strategies. They have to have more input from the CHC board.
Okay. Yeah, I just like things in black and white. You know,
it seems like they said the board would have the could put their priorities down, but yet we retain, we're going to keep the cash. Okay, let's put it that way. We're going to keep the money. Okay, and what they're going to do is they're going to have the financial, they would drive the financial priorities. How do you do that? I mean, what if you just don't quite agree with what their financial priorities are? I sat on this board, okay, on this committee, Jeff and I do, and I just want, can you explain that to me, that they have a financial priority, we have the money. Mm-hmm. What is, at some point, they said, wait a minute, you're a little bit off base here, we don't give you any money, or what happens?
I would look at it this way. I try to think about scenarios that could happen. If the Community Health Center Board decided that, for instance, they really think that we should have more nutrition counseling services,
okay,
but we can't add that without it costing more money.
Mm-hmm.
The appropriation's already in place. So maybe then they look at, well, after-hours care, in terms of our priorities and strategy, maybe we don't need to be open quite so late in the evening where our volumes drop off and it's not very efficient. So what we'll do is, our strategy will be that we'll add the nutrition counseling, but we are going to reduce perhaps some of the after-hours care in order to offset the difference. Staff, we'd have to be running numbers and provide forecasts and whatnot. So I think that's really what it means in terms of setting financial priorities and strategies.
Okay.
They'll have to work within the budget that is authorized by the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
But it is a cooperative venture so that we get the input and feedback, you know, from the 6 user members as well as the 5 non-user members as to what they think services or level of services or hours of operation should be.
Okay. Just wanted a little clarification there because it sounded a little bit fuzzy.
Sure.
But boy, you hit it right on the head. Yeah.
Clearly there has to be collaboration between the
okay.
two. You can't function separately.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Is there anybody in the audience wishing to comment on this agenda item? Is there a motion to approve?
I'd like to move for approval and make the comment that it's absolutely imperative that we meld our application to meet what the federal government requires, because without this, I don't want to set up here and address the health needs of our community without this extra $3 million a year. So
I'm gonna have to second that.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Brings us to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Modesto Chamber of Commerce regarding rent control for mobile home parks.
Refer to Chief Executive Office and County Council.
This board has received a letter from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services regarding the U.S. Business Administration's declaration of several counties as primary and their contiguous counties, one of which is Danforth County, as disaster areas due to economic impacts caused by the freezing conditions that occurred on January 11, 2007, and continuing.
Refer to the Agricultural Commissioner and Tiller Ways and Measures and to the Office of Emergency Services.
This board has received a letter from the Danforth Medical Society and is requesting the implementation of SB 1773, which allows the levying of an additional penalty assessment under the Emergency Medical Services MADI Fund.
Refer to Chief Executive Office, County Council, and Health Services Agency.
This board has received a letter from the State Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation regarding a change in its policies regarding mental health services for parolees.
Refer to Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, Chief Probation Officer, District Attorney, and the Sheriff.
This board has received a letter from Patterson Frozen Foods updating their plan to initiate a plant closing in its frozen food processing, warehousing, and harvesting operations located at 100 West Las Palmas Avenue in Patterson, California, expected to take place within a 14-day period beginning March 21, 2007.
Refer to the Alliance Network, the San Francisco Economic Development and Workforce Alliance, and the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a letter from the Secretary of State regarding the approval of Iron Mountain as a certified ballot tallying Talene Software Source Code Escrow Company and the facility per Section 2639 of the California Administrative Code.
Refer to the clerk recorder and elections officer.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports?
I have some questions. I was somewhat dismayed this morning to read that we have implemented a new farm labor camp policy, of which I had not heard anything about. I'm curious if we could have some sort of a report or hearing at some point in the future. And has the Ag Committee reviewed this at all? Did this come in any way to them?
No, I was at the Ag Advisory Board yesterday, and it didn't come up. I didn't know anything about it myself until...
Well, it strikes me as pretty unusual that something that so dramatically affects the Ag Community doesn't come to the Ag Community Board, but yet I'm notified that the Ag Committee is wanting to review land use policy in the county. So I'm a little confused here, but if we could have some clarity here, it seems that something that is dramatically different as what it appeared to be in the newspaper, we should have at least had an opportunity for public review.
Yeah. What my understanding was that this has been driven by the state of California. And this is an antiquated law that goes back into the early 60s. And calling a employee housing that varies after their milkers a labor camp. And it just doesn't fit anymore. You know, I think of a labor camp, we have an Empire in Wesley, and then there was one built by the federal government in Patterson, and those are, I think, of migrant labor and, you know, temporary housing. What dairies have is permanent housing for their employees and the families. And to call this a labor camp is unrealistic, and it's something that the state ought to change.
Well, it strikes me that if we have the information out in front of us, we can make a determination on whether it's something that we have to do. And if it is, maybe we can use our legislators to seek remedies statewide. That would be helpful for the area.
That might be. What I was told by Environmental Resources yesterday was that if we don't enforce this 1962 law requiring inspections, that the state was going to do it and then send us the bill for it. That's what I was told.
Seems unusual that we could go for 40 years without enforcing it and all of a sudden kind of turn around overnight and do it.
It appears that somebody in the state of California has discovered this and is now just harassing the dairies. I think inspections are going on in Sacramento, San Joaquin, and Merced counties, so now we've been notified. I don't like it either. It's not really a labor camp, and it's for dairies that have over 5 employee houses, and something that we shouldn't be doing. It's an antiquated law, and we really should revisit that on the state level.
Yeah, but these are individual houses. A labor camp doesn't consist of individual houses, probably. You might say, like you mentioned, Empire, that might be it. But years ago, when we had Peaches, we had a labor camp. We had a barn. It had all the facilities. It had beds. It had the kitchen. It had the restroom. It had everything. That would be more in my idea of a labor camp as opposed to a dairy that had 3 or 4 mobile homes there that they use year-round for employees. So that's just my take on it. But, you know, quite truthfully, I don't think any of these things that we should learn about it in the paper. I didn't know anything about it. Jeff didn't know anything about it. You didn't know anything about it. Somebody's going to have to talk to us at some point and tell us about it as we go through these things. Somebody's going to have to talk to the board, because we're the ones that whether we agree with it with the state of California, which we don't have the time anyhow. But somebody's going to have to talk to us.
Yeah, I will follow up on this, and if it appears appropriate, we'll get a time scheduled on a future agenda for this discussion and update to the Board of Supervisors.
Any other Board of Supervisors reports? How about legislative fiscal management report?
Yes, I would like to report that 2 members of the Board of Supervisors and 2 senior CEO staff will be traveling to Washington, D.C. later this week to meet with our federal delegation and other appropriate agencies in addressing some of the county's federal legislative platform. Also want to report to you that we did complete the bond refunding 1996A, 1997A certificates of participation refunding late last week. Our target interest rate savings was 3%. We actually ultimately hit 3.81%. What that means is a net present value savings of $1,750,000 over the remaining 10 years of the bond outstanding, the outstanding bonds. And that was an excellent outcome. We were sweating the volatile marketplace over the last couple of weeks, but very, very pleased with the results of that. I do want to recognize and compliment Courtney Ford, Larry Haw, Patty Hill Thomas, Dean Wright, and most particularly Monica Nino Reed in the Chief Executive Office. Also want to reiterate that a large part of the success of this issue was due to the upgrade of the county's bond rating from an A to an A+. Once again, the first time Stanislaus County has ever qualified for an A+ bond rating.
We do have closed session today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, one item, conference with labor negotiator. Mr. Robinson will be a negotiator of the one organization, County Attorney Association, pursuing the Government Code Section 54957.6. Anticipate no announcement.
We'll adjourn the closed session.